I'm number one on the kill list for Iran. They're lovely people. I'm number one. So I don't know. I can't tell you that, but I don't really care because I'm doing my job and I'm doing it, I hope, better than anybody's ever done it, because we have a country that's hot and really, really successful. But I mention it only because it's on the list. I mean, it came out. There was another list came out yesterday, and I'm number one on – I like being number one on TikTok better, but I'm number one on the list for killing.
This is my video update on this Friday afternoon, July the 10th, coming to you from Limassol, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news, and let's start things off with chat control. Chat control to Major Tom, chat control to Major Ursula. Let's talk about the vote that went down in the EU Parliament yesterday that everyone is talking about, and it has to do with chat control version 1.0. So the vote was to reject the reinstatement of chat control 1.0. Chat control 1.0 was actually running in the EU until it was removed by a vote in the parliament. And this upset the globalist cool kids. And they've been trying very, very hard to get chat control 1.0 reinstated, because that opens up the way for the very, very dangerous chat control 2.0. So the vote takes place to reject the reinstatement of chat control 1.0. Chat control 1.0 was removed in March of 20, it expired in April, and it was removed by a vote in March of 2026, and it expired in April of 2026. And so they want to reinstate it. And the EU Parliament, right before they all go away for summer holidays, and many EU Parliament members are already gone for the summer holidays, the EU decided to pull a fast one. A trick. We've got tools. And as Ursula says, and they decided to run this vote like a day or two before everyone bolts and leaves for the summer to get chat control running again. And the parliament, they rejected. The vote was actually a majority to reject the reinstatement of chat control 1.0. But the trick that Ursula and the cool kids in Brussels played on everyone, outside of just holding it during the summer vacation, was that this was a second reading of the chat control legislation. And during these second readings, you have to get a super majority in the vote. So while a majority of members in parliament voted to reject the reinstatement of chat control, you needed a super majority, 361 votes to reject the reinstatement of chat control. So chat control is now back. We did not get the 361 votes that were needed in parliament. So that is the situation with chat control. 1.0. Now, chat control 1.0, it allows the platforms to the messaging social media platforms to scan messages, DMs, images voluntarily. They voluntarily opt in and they're allowed to scan messages and images. And if they find any kind of child abusive material, CSAM is what it's called. Any kind of material that is CSAM, then they report it to the EU or to police authorities, Europol, Interpol, whatever. So this gives the social media companies, the messaging companies, the green light to scan messages, DMs, and images, and they use their algorithms and stuff like that to try and find material that matches this CSAM. And it does not include encrypted messages. That's important. There was some sort of an amendment that was put into this vote, which removed encrypted messaging. So basically, chat control 1.0 is covering, say, Discord messages, DMs on Instagram, on X, I imagine. I'm not sure if Telegram is end-to-end encrypted. I don't think so. So maybe it also covers Telegram, Gmail, and open email services. But Signal and let's say WhatsApp and other end-to-end encrypted messaging is not allowed to be scanned under chat control 1.0. That is chat control 2.0. And keep in mind, chat control 1.0 is voluntary. So the messaging companies and the social media companies volunteer to scan open messages. Chat control 2.0 is mandatory and it will cover everything, including encrypted end-to-end encrypted messaging, all of it. And they needed chat control 1.0 to be reinstated because in September, they're going to make a big push for chat control 2.0. So that is where we are with chat control. I hope I got everything right. I hope I explained it correctly. Big tech companies have permission to run CSAM detection algorithms on their platforms. That is coming from Claude AI, as far as what chat control 1.0 is all about. And the way they find this, the CSAM, is that they typically have hash matching against known abuse images using automated detection. That's how they find the photos and the messages that are abuse material. I'm trying to be careful with my words because of the YouTube algorithms, but everyone knows what I mean. So in September, Ursula is also going to be pushing for social media ban across the entire EU for 16-year-olds and under. What Australia is trying to do, but I guess Australia's their whole 16-year-old ban is failing. 16-year-olds are finding a way to use social media, and what the UK. That 008 Keir Starmer is pushing through, and now Burnham is also going to push it through. So the EU and Ursula in September, they're going to make a big push for chat control 2.0 and a big push for banning social media for 16-year-olds and under. And of course, it opens the way for just general surveillance. All of this is just opening the way for general surveillance and monitoring of everybody in the European Union, or everybody in the UK, or everybody in Australia. We all understand what all of this is about. But it was very important for them to reinstate chat control 1.0. Without 1.0, you can't get to the big enchilada, which is 2.0. So anyway, that is an update on that big news story. We have some news on Project Ukraine and some statements made by Russian officials, specifically Peskov and Lavrov. So I'm going to walk, that's the world famous oval in Limassol, Cyprus. I'm going to walk to the Trilogy Towers. That's our mission for today. It's not that far. We should get there in about 10 minutes. If anyone's looking for an office, there you go. Good location. So Peskov and Lavrov, they made some interesting statements, very different statements from the two Kremlin officials. Lavrov taking a very realistic, some might say a hardline position, but I consider it a very realistic position as to what is happening with Project Ukraine and with the diplomacy, specifically with the United States. And you have Peskov, who takes a more soft approach to the diplomacy and a wishful approach when it comes to the United States. Wishful thinking from Peskov. Anyway, let's begin with Peskov, who said that the Kremlin views Trump's statements about deep strikes into Russia that he made in Ankara. Rubio actually made those statements, but Trump was in agreement with Rubio. Peskov said that he sees the Kremlin sees these statements not as an escalation, but as misconceptions of the U.S. leadership. So they don't view the statement from Rubio and Trump's agreement on those statements about long-range, deep missile strikes into Russia in order to get Russia to the negotiating table, escalate, in order to get Russia to capitulate. That was basically the strategy that Rubio and Trump laid out at Ankara. According to Peskov, the Kremlin, they do not see this as escalation. They see this more as Trump misconceptions. It's an interesting approach from the Kremlin. Very, very strange war that the Kremlin, the strategy is very, very strange when it comes to the diplomacy side of things with the United States from the Kremlin. Very, very bizarre. But Peskov also said that Trump was very busy and did not have a call with Vladimir Putin over the past couple of days, but that Putin is always happy to talk to Trump. He said that Russia and the United States have established constructive dialogue. He talked about how if Kiev continues to attack Russia, specifically along the border, but all the attacks into Russia will just mean that Russia is going to open up a bigger buffer zone, a larger security zone. And he was asked about the reporter's questions to Trump, the question about the United States creating a no-fly zone, closing the skies over Ukraine, is what the reporter asked Trump. And Trump kind of answered, kind of did not answer. But there was no strong denial from Trump, saying, you know what, we're never going to put a no-fly zone in Ukraine. That would be nuts. That would lead to World War III. That was not Trump's statement. But Peskov said that this was a new one for the Kremlin, a no-fly zone. No one has discussed this topic before. Actually, it's been discussed many, many times, but it's never been presented to Trump. I don't think so directly. Such a direct question has been presented to Trump. Are you going to close the skies over Ukraine? And Trump's answer was not a direct no, we're not going to do that, because that would lead to World War III. So I think that is why they posed this question to Peskov. And his reply was, this is a new one for us. Yeah, it's a new one. It would be a new one if Trump started to talk about a no-fly zone. That would be a very, very dangerous statement and possible escalation from the United States. I don't see it happening, but anyway, that is what Peskov said. Now, Lavrov, he was in Mozambique, and he gave a press conference after his meetings in Mozambique. And Lavrov took a more realistic approach to negotiations and to the United States as the neutral mediator, the Trump administration, the neutral mediator when it comes to Project Ukraine. We will no longer believe the West in its desire for negotiating solutions. Lavrov said, Russia's reserve of goodwill and hope has now been completely exhausted. And he said the West is only pretending to be ready for negotiations on Ukraine and has now openly begun issuing ultimatums to Russia. That was Lavrov's take on all of the statements and everything that went down in Ankara and all of the negotiations that have been taking place over the past few months, if you want to call what has been taking place over the past few months negotiations with Kofin, Kushner, and all of that stuff, Alaska, the spirit of Anchorage, which Lavrov never bought into. Lavrov said the West is continuing its hypocritical calls for negotiations in 2014 and 15, and again in 2019. Negotiations overseen by the West led to outcomes which were then destroyed. Those guarantees were undermined by the West itself. They were false. Oh. So you can see the two very different positions from Lavrov and Peskov. Well, Lavrov is right. 2014, 2019, 2022. Alaska. One sec. Needed to get through the music. So Zelensky, he put out a statement saying that the United States has promised him Patriot missiles in the next couple of days. And the Europeans are also scrambling to find Patriot missiles, and those will be delivered to Ukraine very soon as well. I believe the Trump administration will find some Patriot missiles to get to Ukraine, but no doubt the bulk of what they have when it comes to air defense and Patriot missiles and stuff like that will go to the Middle East. It will go to Israel. It will go to the Gulf countries. No doubt about it. That the bulk of everything will go there. They'll hand over some scraps of missiles, what they can, to Le Gobelin Vert. And then Le Gobelin Vert talked up the license again. Hey, we're going to manufacture a Patriot missiles. Good luck with that. Good luck manufacturing those Patriot missiles. Le Gobelin Vert will be able to probably sign many, many contracts with European countries based on the license that Trump gives him, and he'll earn his 1% commission. The United States earning the 99% of the contract, but still, nonsense, the license. But Le Gobelin Vert is talking it up big time. Good salesman, Le Gobelin Vert. Anyway, that is Zelensky. He sat down with Navrovsky while in Ankara. And while they cannot resolve their differences when it comes to NAZIs, Navrovsky telling Ukraine to stop glorifying the NAZIs, Zelensky saying, we have all the right to glorify the NAZIs. That's their big difference that they cannot resolve. But they did come to one common conclusion, which is that they are both fighting a common enemy in Russia. That was what they agreed on. We both have a common enemy, and that common enemy is Russia. So they agreed on that, but they could not agree on how to bridge their differences when it comes to the glorification of NAZIs. Let's now talk about Iran and what is happening with the restart of the war in Iran with the Trump administration and the U.S. military going after Hormuz is what it looks like. They are making a big push to capture Hormuz. That's the key, right? Capture Hormuz and you remove Iran's leverage. 70, 80 days ago, Hormuz was open and toll free. Now the United States is trying to find a way to capture Hormuz so as to prevent Iran from controlling the strait and imposing a toll on tankers that move through Hormuz. And we had the story from the Wall Street Journal, which claims that Israel shared some intel with the Trump administration on Iran taking out the U.S. president. This is according to the WSJ. CNN has also confirmed this reporting from the Wall Street Journal using the very reliable anonymous sources familiar with the matter and Israeli sources that whispered in Trump's ear that they have information where they claim that Iran has singled out the U.S. president. Their number one target is Trump. That explains Trump's bizarre statement in Ankara during his press conference, where he started to talk about how he's taken out level one of the Iranian leadership, level two, and now you have level three. And then he started to talk about how they want to take him out and he may no longer be around because Iran has targeted him. He was making that bizarre statement, a very bizarre statement in Ankara. And everyone was kind of scratching their heads. What's Trump talking about? Iran is targeting him and stuff like that. Well, now we know. Now we know. He was getting information and intel from Israel that there was some sort of plot or plan to remove him. Iran's revenge. The Wall Street Journal's article has the title, Iran Hatched Fresh Plot to Kill Trump, Israel told the U.S. Israel recently shared new intelligence with the U.S. that it said showed Iran was considering a new plan to assassinate the president, sources say. So the U.S. military is looking at Karg Island again. Not only Karg Island, they're also looking at Keshem as well. These two islands, I believe. Karg and Keshem. Karg. Pirate Trump wants to take Karg Island. Either take it or completely destroy it. This is all the strategy connected to Hormuz. Try to capture and control Hormuz. Destroy Karg, destroy Keshem, or capture Karg, capture Keshem. And that's it. You've demolished Iran's economy. You control Hormuz. Game over. That's the master plan of the Trump administration when it comes to the Iran war. 3.0 now? Is that where we are? If you consider Operation Midnight Hammer 1, the war, the 60-day war. Come on, it's not working. The 60-day war 2.0, I guess this is 3.0. I don't know. I'm stupid. I can't figure it out. All this high-tech stuff. Anyway, capture Hormuz. Take Karg. Take Keshem. Checkmate. If you're going to capture Karg, and if you're going to capture Keshem, now we can cross. TGIs. If you're not going to destroy these islands, if you're going to try to capture them, it's going to need huge, huge military resources. A lot of troops are going to be needed to capture and to hold something like Karg Island. It's not just about capturing it. You have to hold it as well. And then you have to deal with Iranian drones and missiles. That would be a very dangerous operation, but it's being considered. I don't know if it'll happen, but there's a lot of talk about it. Now, there was an interesting story. The trilogy, 1, 2, the third one is being built down there. I'm going to probably go to that coffee shop over there when I'm done with this video. There was an interesting story about an attack into Iran that the United States denied that they were behind it. They said that wasn't our operation. And it looks like what happened is that Bahrain and Kuwait launched a joint strike against Iran. So the war appears to be expanding. What the U.S. did hit, which is a big escalation, it shows you that it's that what they hit really, really shows that this is about China and BRICS. They hit a railway bridge, Akteke Khan, in northeastern Iran. And this land bridge, this railway bridge, is part of the north-south corridor, and it connects Iran with other countries that eventually take you to China or can take you to Russia. And so the U.S. Air Force hit this bridge, this corridor, railway bridge, in order to prevent any type of trade crossing over land, and also any type of exports that bypass Hormuz, because Iran was using this land corridor, this railway bridge, to get oil to China when Hormuz was completely shut down and nothing was passing, and you had the U.S. sea blockade in place. This north-south corridor was actually utilized by Iran, and it got stuff to China. And the U.S. Air Force is now targeting this land corridor. Very revealing. So BlackRock Mertz, he said in Ankara that Germany is going to be ordering Tomahawk missiles. All about the money. The money going to the U.S. MIC. Germany doesn't need Tomahawk missiles. What are they going to do with Tomahawk missiles? But they're going to purchase Tomahawk missiles. Gotta keep Trump happy. Pay tribute to the United States. And And then we got the news from Bloomberg, which says that Germany is proposing a consumer levy to fund an emergency gas reserve. So they're going to place taxes, I think, on electricity bills and stuff like that. They're going to place taxes on consumer and business utilities in order to fund a gas reserve because Nord Stream was blown up, right, by Gilligan. That's basically it. That is it right there. They've sanctioned Russia. They cut off Russia. Nord Stream was blown up by Gilligan, Sergey K, and the OnlyFans diver, expert diver. And so now they're trying to create some sort of a gas reserve. And then you have the Middle East and Qatar, which is going to be very problematic for the European Union, because in their diversification efforts, they've diversified down to the United States and a little bit of Qatar, but Qatar is now out of the equation. And so Germany is in panic. Merz is in panic, and his solution is a emergency gas reserve. But in order to do that, we're going to have to tax the people. Way to go, BlackRock Merz. Incredible. Okay, that is it for today's news. Let's now get into clown world territory, or was everything clown world? And now I'm going to just extend clown world. We have the foreign minister of France, Baghdad Barrault, Noël Barrault. We can call him Baghdad Barrault, in reference to Baghdad Bob. He says some wild things when it comes to Project Ukraine, and he did not disappoint today. He was meeting with Radislav. Thank you, USA, for blowing up Nord Stream, Sikorsky, the foreign minister of Poland. No sidewalks, so want to cross over. And Barrault, he started to talk about how Russia is losing against Ukrainian resistance. He said that Putin is failing on the front line, arguing that Moscow's recent provocations reflect setbacks on the battlefield. Looks like Barrault did not get the news about Konstantinovka or about Liman, or about the eventual fall of Slavyansk or Kramatorsk. He's not getting that information. Probably doesn't have access to that information. He's only the foreign minister of France. He probably doesn't get that level of intel. But Baghdad Barrault saying that Russia is losing on the battlefield. Wow. Putin is failing. Wow. And he also said that we're going to get some Russian provocations, which is code, globalist code for they're going to put out some provocations. Whenever they say the other side is cooking up provocations, what they basically are telling us is that they're cooking up some provocations. So that's Baghdad Barrault, clown world number one. Clown world number two takes us back to the NATO summit in Turkey and the gift that Erdogan gave to all of the leaders that attended the NATO summit was a pistol. That was the gift that everyone left with. And the funny part about this gift, a pistol, ammunition, like a collector's item, right? Beautiful pistol, which is what Erdogan gave to all of the leaders of Europe. But the funny thing is that most of the collective West leaders were not allowed to bring the pistol back to their country, or it would get confiscated. the moment that they landed in their home country, because they can't bring guns, right? Any guns. So like Belgium, the Prime Minister, De Wever, couldn't even see the pistol, didn't even get a chance to look at it. He was asked by a reporter about the gift, and he's like, I couldn't even see it. It was taken away because we can't bring the gun into Belgium. Pretty smart gift from Erdogan. Pretty smart. You have a conference, a NATO conference, which is all about war and military aggression and weapons sales. And your gift is a collector's item pistol. And you expose the fact that 99% of the NATO member states can't do anything with that gift, right? Pretty interesting move from Erdogan. He knows what's up. This was planned. This was planned by Erdogan. I think he wanted to expose or embarrass the collective West. All they do is talk about war and aggression and warmongering and defeating Russia and weapon sales and all of these things. And when he gifts them a pistol, they can't even accept it. Interesting move from Erdogan, I must admit. We have some breaking news out of Turkey, actually. Not a clown world, but it is some breaking news. And it is that Turkey has found a buyer of the S-400s, the Russian S-400s. It looks like they're selling them to Qatar or the UAE. Now, can they sell the S-400s without Russia's approval? I think they need Russia's approval, or because of sanctions, they don't need it, or what's going on there? I imagine that Russia must have some sort of a way to deactivate those S-400s if they're not approved by Russia. Because I'm positive that if you're going to sell those S-400s to a third-party country, you have to get the approval of the manufacturing country, whether it's the United States or Russia or China. You have to get approval from them. So I wonder how this deal is going down. If Russia actually said, okay, you can hand over these S-400s to the UAE or to Qatar. Basically, what this does is that it opens up the way for Turkey to be reinstated back into the F-35 program and to get sanctions lifted. So the ball is now in Trump's court. Very smart move. This was a smart move. We'll see. Can Trump now go back to the United States and tell Congress, tell lawmakers, they've given up their S-400, so there's no more excuses to prevent them from getting the F-35s or from having sanctions removed. Netanyahu, public statement, he has said, no way do I want Turkey to get F-35s, because that would change the balance of power in the Middle East. He doesn't want Turkey to have those F-35s. Greece does not want Turkey to have those F-35s. So this was a very, very, very clever move by Erdogan, if the S-400s can really go to the UAE or Qatar. And maybe Russia goes along with this to see what the United States is going to do next. Will they lift sanctions? Will they reinstate Turkey into the F-35 program? What will be Israel's reaction? What will be Greece's reaction? Interesting story. That's the video, everybody. TheDuran.locals.com. We are on X and Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran shop. Pick up some merch, like what I am wearing in this video update, like what I'm wearing in this video update. And to everyone that is smashing that like button, thank you so much for liking this video. Thank you to everyone that is subscribed to this channel. Please check your subscriptions, because YouTube does remove my subscribers for some strange reason. So check to see that you are still subscribed to this channel, and thank you so much for also hitting that hype button, the famous hype button. One day I'm going to get to 260,000 subscribers on YouTube. I don't know when that day will be, but one day it's gonna happen and we're gonna throw a party. Oh boy, chat control to Major Ursula. I'm signing out, everybody. Take care.